Welcome to Teaching Writing, Ideas and Strategies. Hi, my name is Roger Graves. I'm professor in English and Film Studies and Associate Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning at the University of Alberta, where I'm also the Director of Writing Across the Curriculum. This podcast is an extension of the work that I do in Writing Across the Curriculum, where I try to work with instructors across the campus to teach writing better in their classes. So I've been talking about a lot of different aspects of teaching writing in the last few months. And today I'm going to talk about audience. How do we talk about audience in a way that's meaningful to students, and how do we use it to create assignments which are meaningful for them? One of the things I've done in the past 10 years is co-write a handbook, the Brief Pearson Handbook. And in the first chapter of that handbook, we try to talk to students about audiences and about the process of communication. And I'd just like to give a little bit of background about where that's coming from. So in the 1960s, 1970s, there was a big emphasis within writing studies on process approaches to writing, which is to say that instead of just creating a draft or a one version of a paper and handing it in, students were encouraged to think through the process of developing that paper, getting feedback to it, revising it, and then handing it in. Well, all that was tied up with a renewed interest in rhetoric, and specifically in the concept of audience as it comes through in rhetorical studies. Now, in my association with this, I was a PhD student at Ohio State, Edward Corbett, who the author of Modern Rhetoric for the Classical Student. I took courses through him and came to understand the concept of audience as it came to us through Greek rhetoric. Now, in Greek rhetoric, the audience was present. You know, the rhetor was talking to people. It wasn't a written discourse so much as it was definitely an oral discourse. Now, today we might think of audience more as readers of a written text. Walter Ong maintained in the latter part of the 20th century that we were entering a period of what he called secondary orality. Those oral texts we listen to on TV and radio, or podcasts for that matter, they existed first as written scripts or texts. So the oral version is secondary to the primary or written text, hence the term secondary orality. Now, judging from the many YouTube videos I have seen lately, however, I'm no longer confident that any of them had a primary or written script that preceded the filming. From the point of view of rhetorical studies, though, we need to understand audience as part of what Lloyd Bitzer famously called the quote-unquote rhetorical situation. Here's Lloyd Bitzer on defining a rhetorical situation. He says that it's a complex of persons, events, objects, and relations presenting an actual or potential exigence, which can be completely or partially removed if discourse introduced into a situation can so constrain human decision or action as to bring about the significant modification of the exigence or the solution to the problem. That's maybe another way to think about that. According to Bitzer, there were three aspects of a rhetorical situation. The exigence, or the thing that sparks the problem, it is the problem, it's the thing that sparks the discourse. The audience, who listens to it and can act on it. And the constraints, or the range of things that can be done about the situation. The thing that makes situations rhetorical is that the situation presents a problem that calls for discourse as the solution to it. So in other words, these situations present problems that speech and writing can solve, or that we can solve through our speech and through the things that we write. Sharon Crowley, in her book Ancient Rhetorics for Contemporary Students, took on the same problem. Here's Crowley on rhetorical situations. She says that while students of ancient rhetoric engaged in a good deal of practice with artificial rhetorical situations taken from history or literature or law, this practice was aimed at teaching them something about the community they would later serve, as well as about rhetoric. In other words, they did not study rhetoric only to learn its rules, as modern students do when they take a class in composition. Their study was preparation for a life of active citizenship. Crowley makes the point that a rhetorical situation is made up of several elements, primarily the issue for discussion, so not the topic, but what's being written about, thinking about it as an issue. And then the next thing she talks about is the audience who's going to hear that discussion and the audience's relationship to that issue, or the thing that's getting that they're thinking about, the reason that they came to hear this talk, the reason the paper was written. What is it you're going to tell me about that I want to know about and that I have an opinion about, and that you want me to do something about, even if that's just to understand it differently or from a certain perspective. Issues are matters about which there's a disagreement. And so when we ask students to write something, we need to either give them a situation where there is a disagreement about how to understand, say, a certain issue in a discipline, or there's an event happening in the society and we need them to take a position on that, and there's disagreement about what's the appropriate way to understand it, what's the appropriate action to take about it. But without an issue, there's no rhetorical situation. And without a rhetorical situation, we don't have an audience for students to write to. And that's a problem. In College Writing and Beyond, a book by Ann Beaufort, she talks about this problem. She says, because usually there is no overt linking of the course to any intellectual discipline, that is to say a writing course, the overriding social context for students becomes the institutional requirement for the course itself. So writing papers or assignments in that writing course is perceived by students as an activity to earn a grade rather than to communicate to an audience of readers in a given discourse community. Now, there are all kinds of problems associated with this. One of them is that students come to think about writing as something that is generic. They can do it in this writing course. They're going to transfer that to other courses. And when that fails them, that is a huge problem for them. It's where the thing that they have learned in the writing course doesn't connect with what they're doing in their disciplinary courses. And so they've transferred some learning, but not in a way that's helpful to them. Now, Beaufort goes on to summarize a bunch of studies that have taken place in the 80s and 90s in which they documented the fact that context-specific expectations about what counts as good writing is what matters. So writing standards are largely cultural and socially specific. And the problem, as Beaufort points out, is that for novice writers, people who are new to the university, new to the discipline, they're not figuring that out. They're not being told that, and that's going to lead to some pretty bad writing. So one of the things we tried to do in the brief Pearson handbook was address students directly and ask them to think about their instructor as a kind of audience. They're the person who's going to be reading your paper, so what do you think they know about your subject? Do they want you to define key terms for them or concepts? And if so, is the reason that they want you to do that for you to show that you know them? So how interested are they in your subject, in the particular topic or issue that you selected to write about? And is there a way in which you might talk to them to see if there's some aspect of the issue that they would like to know more about? What we're trying to do here is kind of prompt them to think about the actual person who's reading this, what they're trying to get out of it. Well, let's take a look at two assignments from different disciplines in which the instructors have tried to give students a specific audience to write to. The first one is from a sociology course, and the assignment is to write a policy brief. Now, the instructor gives quite a bit of information and refers students to where they could read some existing policy briefs and talks a lot about who's reading them and what they're reading them for. The audience they specify is, imagine you are preparing the brief for the relevant minister in the federal government. That may seem a bit off, but because of the other information about the policy brief genre, it's easy for students to understand what the situation is for this document, who's going to read it, when they're going to read it, what they're going to read it for. Here's the second assignment. This is from an environmental studies course, Renewable Resources. And in this class, the students are asked to write a report that is an environmental assessment. And they're asked to write that report for an environmental consulting firm. The instructors have taken great pains to talk to students about the client or proponent for the report, and what those people are looking for, what they want to get out of the report. Other instructors have asked students to write letters to the editor or op-edit articles for various newspapers. These are all examples of different audiences with different constraints on them, but they give students a better sense of a rhetorical situation and an audience that is outside of the instructor, and that's critical for their overall writing development. This has been Teaching Writing, Ideas and Strategies. Next week, we'll talk a little bit more about purpose and how it functions as part of the rhetorical situation. Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast and that you'll like it on the Podcast-O-Matic website.